Party!
What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to another episode of the War Room. I'm Jared. That's Trevor. And with us tonight, we got a special guest over the phone because he's too popular to come over. He's booked up. You know, he did this other podcast in Okmulgee called "I Got Stuck in Okmulgee."
People watching.
Yeah, they've got about.
Called Mugtown's finest.
Yeah, no, that's a pretty good way to explain to describe it. But Luke, how you been, man? It's been a while.
Oh man, I'll tell you, like, went through some crazy weather for a little while. Got, you know, snowed in for a little bit, but it's nice outside tonight. That's where I'm at, on my porch. Just got home from work and chilling. This weekend went to the Big 12 wrestling tournament. Had a great time. Oklahoma State wound up taking first place. David Taylor's first year as head coach. Great time. Went to the Thunder game too on Friday.
Yeah, dude, I was going to say, Luke's on like a Make-A-Wish weekend, yes. Like, getaway. Like, he won like one of those cereal box raffles.
I'm killing off the list, one at a time.
I got one weekend for the year, dude, and like, I got to get it all out.
It sounds like the weekend of someone that's about to die. I got to go catch a Thunder game, the Big 12 championship. What's next?
It's weekend at Bernie's, but I'm alive.
Yeah. You don't need people to help you walk around, but I imagine you dress like, I don't know why, but I could see pulling Bernie's style off from that movie.
Maybe in a beach environment, maybe on a rocket, you
know. No, man, you gotta bring the beach to where you're at, you know what I mean?
That's
bring
a good
the
point,
beach
man.
Oklahoma.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, how many
all
people
over here.
So many people in Oklahoma wishes they could just walk into the ocean, but they can't because they're fucking here.
I mean, sure, they could walk into Keystone.
Yeah, you could. Yeah. And then you come out and nothing.
Nobody'd ever find you.
Nothing but skeleton from the waist down as soon as you come back in. Come back out.
Yeah.
That was the first lake I ever peed in, actually, I'm pretty sure.
I guarantee it. I think that's a rite of passage right there.
Yeah, dude, I remember when I was a kid, I went to Keystone Lake, and I'm pretty sure, because I've peed in every body of water I've ever been in, so.
You know, when I was a little kid, I always thought Keystone Beer was named after Keystone Lake. It made a lot of sense, because everybody was drinking it had to pee. I pissed so bad.
I thought that until I was like 22.
I thought it until now. I just found that out.
I used to fucking, whenever you're like younger, you do things to be funny, like, you know, like, yeah. Oh, I'm going to drink this ironically because, you know, like as a bit.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, I'd take Keystone down to the river and I like wear like one of those like life preserver vests like Keith Stone would from the commercials. And I'd fucking like toss Keystones like from the because I wasn't like floating. I just want to be on the riverbank. My buddies just pounding Keystones, which is not. It's all right. I mean, it's not.
I mean,
it's good,
like,
cheap
it's like
beer.
Heavy water.
It's good, cheap beer.
At this point, I don't think I would buy it on purpose, but if I went to someone's house and they're like, hey, you want a beer? And they gave me one, I'd drink it.
You'd
refuse it.
Yeah. But I mean, like, back in the day, Dollar General would have it for, like, you know, $7 for a 15 pack.
Oh, I mean, I used to drink the Busch Light, the wide mouth cans, the orange ones of that. You remember, like, they did, like, fucking back in the
day? Oh, yeah. Under wide mouths.
Yeah, dude, like orange can, like the camo and shit. I used to drink those because you can get a 30 of that in Edmond for like $12.
No, I remember going over to this guy's house in high school. We were having a party, and somebody had a whole cooler full of Mad Dog beers. A Red Dog, man. My bad. Mad Dog's the wine, 2020.
Yep.
That'll give you a hangover too, but those Red Dogs, man, that's probably the worst beer I've ever had, but we were just crushing them back to back. Honestly, I don't even remember the next day. Like, it was a blur of like vomit and I don't know.
You know, it's
not
funny.
Good, whatever it was.
It's funny, Luke. That's usually how I feel after I drink the beer. Because once I run out of my beer, I drink the beer you leave here. And that's usually how I feel after that. Like, what is this fucking caramel salted pickle beer? What the fuck?
Caramel salted pickle beer.
Well, man, normally I've been trying to keep it like, you know, like the old Miller Lite or whatever, because I like that stuff too. Like, I'm not no beer snob. I'll drink anything. Right now, I'll be, you know, I'll drink a regular Budweiser, but, you know, I do like to try different things out, varieties, the spice of life.
I don't. You know what I mean? I like the beer I like.
You know what I mean?
I don't want to go to one of those places where they give you 40 different beers and they're all like black.
They call it the flight.
Yeah. I'm good, man. You got to wear a turtleneck.
Yeah, a lot of them are trash, too. I'll be honest. Like, oh, yeah. There's a lot of those beers that
sour
they like,
ale.
It's horrible.
Oh, yes. God. They try to hype it up and they're just garbage, man.
10% alcohol. It's yeah. Like, yeah. So you can get drunk
enough. You can only drink one because you're like, ugh.
Dude.
Yeah, if you're going to do that, you might as well just go buy a bottle of liquor.
Like, one of my favorite things to do back whenever I'd play at that open mic at Kroner and Bear in Tahlequah was, like, the person, like, behind the bar, because it's, like, a fucking craft beer place or, like, an IPA, like, you know, where all those fucking intellectuals go to drink. I'd love, like, they'd sit there and, you know, they give you the pitch. Like, here we have a fucking, today we've got a 9.7 Thomas Jefferson beer or whatever. And I love they'll do this whole pitch and I'm like, yeah, I'll have a Michelob. I'll have one of the
I remember when we went to that when fucking trivia night.
Yeah.
And that bar was like super.
They don't have any.
Yeah, we literally were like, what do you have that's closest to like regular beer?
And they're like, oh. Like, and they look at you like,
yeah, okay. Like, well, this is kind of somewhat
like, what are you guys doing here?
Yeah, because a bunch of those assholes, they're drinking ciders. Yeah. And fucking.
I mean, they didn't have regular beer on the menu at all.
There's not like.
Even, there's no Budweiser.
There's no like. Everything there is like made locally, which is cool.
Yeah. It's but just like, why don't you make some local light beer? You know,
the Solera is pretty good. That Cerveza. That's pretty
good. I've been to Solera. Yeah, it's decent.
It's all right. I wouldn't go there to drink.
I think if we ever went back for the trivia night, Luke should definitely go. He'd be good at he could. You guys could double in the history
Me
questions.
Me and Luke could just go by ourselves.
I think me and you could
do some damage. Dude, I was basically carrying the team. I'd go up there. We'd fucking. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I was just like, I'm like the Ray Allen. I'm like the Ray Allen of the group, where like you got one shot where you're like, oh shit, like that was an important shot because you know like nobody got it kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. No, I. Trivia night, but the thing is though, I noticed that people like genuinely have a lot of fun playing, and I don't because I want to win. You know what I mean?
The same thing when I was on the academic team. Yep. Like I want to fight kids, nerd kids afterwards. I guess.
Well, especially if you get the fucking get it right, you get a free beer. Once we learn that, we're like, we have to win all the time.
I've still got chips in there for when I go back because I'm gonna cash in on that. And then like I'm like, there's no expiration date on these. First two are on the house. No, I remember, dude, one time. So like the way they do I don't know, like four or five rounds. And they ask like, I don't know how many questions. And then like there's like a, you know, they do like a bonus like point question or like a tiebreaker. And I remember that like if you have like both teams are tied, they'll do a tiebreaker question. And I remember one time I was like, if it has anything to do with birthdays or dates, these people are fucked. And it was a fucking question like, but the thing is like, they're like, all right, what the closest date, that Rooney Mara was born on. And I was like, oh, these motherfuckers are fucked. I was like fucking 16 days off or whatever. But dude, the person that was there that I was going with wasn't that far off. They're like 2 months off. And I was like, Jesus Christ. These people ain't fucking around. But the thing is, though, the guy that runs that thing, I don't know if he still does. He apparently, like, took it over after being, like, he was, like, he has his own team that he was on.
And then he
took over running the trivia night fucking that he used Monopoly. To go to. And his team still exists. He's just not on it anymore. But they always used to win. And I was like, this is bullshit. He's the guy's cheating.
Yeah, so we had to pull the bill. We had to pull the Bill Belichick. A little bit of tricks under our own sleeve.
Yeah, Trevor had to go to the bathroom at certain times to,
I remember when I was at Webster, like, we played Booker T and academic team, and they had this guy named Parker, and this dude, he was like a Ken Jennings of fucking Tulsa Public Schools or something.
I love Ken Jennings.
Before the questions even asked, he'd buzz in. I think he had, like, I don't know, like,
all right, I'm gonna know
lightning round. He had 200 points for both lightning rounds, like, got all 10 questions in a row. It was ridiculous.
Dude, so my freshman year, I was on the varsity academic team. I was the only freshman on there. And I averaged 100 points a game because I kept stats because I'm a fucking, you know. And so I averaged answering 10 questions correct a game, which isn't bad considering that, like, however many rounds you do, I think they ask, like, I don't know, 20 questions or something in each round. Or I don't remember. I don't remember exactly. Dude, there's this guy on our team, the senior that was on my team. This dude averaged 260 points a game.
Jesus
this guy
Christ.
Was answering, like, almost 30 questions correctly a game. And if it was a lightning round, like a math computation, you're fucked. This guy was like, he didn't even need paper. Like, they would, like, during math computations, I would just, like, fucking, I'd go radio side. I'd tune out because I'm like, I don't even, after the 16th number in the equation that they say, I'm like, all right, I'm out. I can't do this. But, I was pretty much good at everything besides math. And, like, what's funny is Mr. Barris, he thought that I was just going to be the sports guy. Like, I was going to be spinning a basketball on my finger whenever they're asking stuff about fucking literature. And then I ended up fucking what am I just bragging about being smart here? Let's talk about something else. No, academic team. What? Oh, what the hell? What happened to Luke?
I guess it's a good thing he wasn't talking there.
So I'm just over here talking like some asshole about how good I was at academic team, and Luke's not even on the phone.
Imagine how I felt like talking and realizing there was no connection.
Dude, I was just over here sitting about in my time in the academic team.
Back in my day.
Yeah, dude, I just sounded like a fucking guy with a fucking hat, like a beret on and a scarf.
I'll say this. Sweet, I went to that wrestling, Big 12 wrestling this weekend, and you think, like, officials get, like, hammered in basketball and football and all these sports. Like, wrestling, the abuse that wrestling officials get is intense, man. It borders line Little League baseball. Like, it's,
what are they even saying?
Intense,
like,
man.
I mean, it's pretty cut and dry.
Well, Trevor, it's kind of like
that should have been a point.
I mean, like, there's people. Well, Trevor,
it's definitely not cut and dry. Like, there's a lot of discrepancy.
No, I'm saying it should
on, like,
be as far as like.
Well, Trevor, there's people that think Pereira won. There's people that think Alex won the other night.
I watched UFC this weekend. Pierre definitely did not win.
No, he did. I don't know how anybody. That's just like I'm saying. Like, people watch it and they see different things.
I got to shout out Justin Gaethje because that's my favorite fighter for a while now, and he had a good performance for an old guy.
Yeah, not bad. I'd watch those two guys duke it out again. That was a good fight.
Yeah, it was. It was
but
very solid.
I will say. Ankalaev versus fucking Alex Pereira. I bought into the hype, but then I was just like looking at it and I was like, wait a minute. All I was hearing was like Pereira, what's his weakness? And then everybody kept saying, well, he's not great on the ground. And I was like, oh, well, he's going to lose then. It's over. If I had $20,000, I'd put it on on Ankalaev. I'd put it on the Dagestani. I'm telling you, dude, they're the new Gracies. Well, they've created they've created the answer to jiu-jitsu. What they do negates jiu-jitsu, and that's why it's dominating the UFC right now.
What I find interesting, and some of that's true. I agree with that in principle. But what I like about Islam, the guy lightweight champion, is that he's incorporated like the anti-jiu-jitsu and then added his own style of jiu-jitsu with his wrestling, and like he submits everybody. I mean, I know he head kicked Volkanovski and finished him, but for the most part, once that guy gets you on the ground, you're tapping, you're taking a nap. Like, that guy is just he's a wizard, like, in all areas. And he's better striking than Habib, you know? Like, he has better stand-up than Habib. Like, I think it's time that people recognize that maybe Islam might be the greatest lightweight champion of all time.
He could be, and I still think Habib was, you know, he's the best. Was he middleweight? I think he was the best middleweight.
He was lightweight too.
He was. Oh well, I thought he was middleweight for some reason. No, I don't know, man. See, here's the thing. Like, I agree, but you could also argue Ankalaev is a better striker than Habib was. I don't think either of them could hang with him on the ground, though.
It's interesting that you say that because I actually thought Pierre was going to win the fight because Ankalaev's previous fights, like, he did not use his wrestling a whole lot. He's actually way better on the feet than what people gave him credit for.
Oh, yeah. And he didn't even go to the ground against Pereira. He stood with him pretty much the whole fight.
He used cage control. Like, he backed him up against the cage, controlled him, you know, controlled the position. His wrestling was really used for positional control on the feet. Like, he'd you know, he'd dig the hooks in, back him up, and then he'd come off the clinch and tag him with a cross or a hook or something like that. A lot of dirty. It reminded me of Randy Couture.
Yeah.
How Randy Couture would push you up against the fence and dirty box you, then occasionally shoot for a takedown to keep you guessing on what he was going to do. But Randy was never a guy that, like, just took you down and held you there and threw elbows and stuff like that. He would get in the clinch. He'd throw those dirty uppercuts and just a very inside, in the pocket, you know, type fighter. And I think Alex was so worried about getting put on his back
yep.
in the middle of the octagon that once he got up against the fence, he sacrificed position for because, I mean, it's a lot easier to stand up usually against the fence than it is in the center. So, but the problem with that was Ankalaev could control the distance there, and he was just way better in the pocket. Alex is good at range. He kicked the shit out of Ankalaev's legs. Like, he had Ankalaev's legs all beat up. But he didn't throw no headshots. He didn't work the body like he usually does. You know, he roasted Roundtree's ribs. Like, he was just eating them like they were baby backs or something.
Well, I mean, you look at both of them, and immediately what I'm thinking is, all right, Pereira's got to, like, keep him at bay, and he's got to be doing the advancing. He's longer. He's got longer arms. He's got longer legs. He's got that incredible knockout power where if he catches you just right, he'll knock out anybody.
That left hook is – Yeah.
So, like, the whole – what I found interesting was he completely let Ankalaev control the match from the beginning. Like, he got back – first of all, like – he was like that. Ankalaev was doing this that drop knee move, like that knee, that move that yes. he was doing where he's stomping like down on his knee, like towards his shin yes. or whatever. That was what was keeping Pereira backed up. And you're right. Once he would get him into the cage, it was basically just like, it was just all Pereira was doing was defending a takedown, which I will give him this. The best thing he did that whole fight was his takedown defense was great. He never let it go to the ground. But like you said, though, it kind of just played into Ankalaev's strategy, because it's just like, oh, you don't want to go to the ground, fine, I'll just control you on the cage and not let you use your length against me. But it's just funny, like, you would think that, like, at the start of a new round, Pereira might advance and kind of start, you know, throwing some jabs, keeping him.
He would try to be more aggressive.
Yeah, but like, because obviously just standing with him and letting him put you in what position he wants you to be put into, you've got to, like, I mean, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, obviously you're worried about, you know, going to the ground, but, like, keeping him at bay with jabs and kicks and just kind of keeping him at arm's length until you can get an open shot. And then his takedown defense, I mean, I got to say, is good. So, I mean, he could have definitely
really
he could have afforded to be a little bit more aggressive. I don't know how it would have went if it had went to the ground, but it never even did. And that, honestly, is more of a testament to how kind of scared Pereira fought. Like, he completely...
I thought that exactly.
Also, how often does someone lose their belt on a decision? That tells you everything you need to know. Like,
right.
Most of the time, you've got to damn near knock the guy out or just completely dominate physically.
It's especially thinking, like, in the upper weight classes right now, you really have, like, three guys. And I hate to say this because it used to be the UFC's premier division. Yeah, Couture, Liddell, Rampage, Wanderlei Silva, Shogun, Forrest, all these guys, right? Rashad Evans. Like, people knew the 205 division. It was its premier division. Now, when you hear people talk about the upper weight classes, heavyweight and light heavyweight, you really got John Jones, who's one fight away from retirement, Tom Aspinall, and you got Alex Pereira. And now, like, what are they going to do? Like, you know, once John retires, and if he beats Aspinall on the way out, they're struggling at those heavier weights. They're kind of going through what boxing went through after Tyson retired at those heavier weights. I mean, they got serviceable guys, but they don't have star power like they have with McGregor. And I'm not even a big McGregor fan, but he brought fans in. He brought casual eyes and built their status in their company.
Well, I mean, even, like, honestly, if you think about it, Jones going to heavyweight might have been bad for heavyweight division, especially considering that he's just dominating it. You know what I mean?
Cleaned out a division and left it in ruins, basically.
Like, a lot of people seem to think that Tom Aspinall might be the guy that take him to. I don't know.
They need him. They need him to.
Well, I mean, that would honestly.
If he took him out and
losing
then passed the torch, kind of fucking
thing. I do think, though, the fact that John Jones wasn't like a. a pure heavy, you know what I mean? He had to bulk up and gain a lot of weight to go up to heavyweight, which I guess he's always been a light heavyweight, you know what I mean? So, I mean, he's always, you know, but the fact that he went up another notch, I think could also be something that, because people do that for McGregor all the time. Like, if you bring up one of his losses at a heavier weight, he's like, well, he doesn't normally fight at that. It's like, well, did he? Okay, well then.
Yeah, he decided to. I mean,
he talks a lot of shit, though. I don't either. I think, oh, if you usually fight at 145, don't talk a lot of shit, go 30 pounds heavier, and then be surprised that you're not quite as effective at that weight. You know what I mean? Like, it's just.
I think McGregor had the privilege of fighting guys at 145 that it was in kind of a transitional period at the time. Where some of the guys that were at lightweight, they were going to drop down to featherweight, like Frankie Edgar. Who I think Frankie Edgar in his prime would have got McGregor. He would have got him on the ground. He would have outworked him. And he eventually finished him. But, I mean, you could argue the point that McGregor did beat Menendez at 145, and Menendez was one of his toughest fights. But, I mean, I ain't going to take nothing away from that run he had. It's one of the greatest runs in UFC history. He smoked Aldo. But if you remember, that was at lightweight, not featherweight.
No, I agree. I just think, I don't know. The whole Conor McGregor thing, I just think, I don't know.
He had a historic flash in the pan. Like, it was, he knew how to strike while the iron was hot. He's not the guy like Anderson or St. Pierre or, you know, Matt Hughes, Chuck Liddell's that had these long, lengthy runs like McGregor. McGregor had flaws all along, and it just was a matter of time before they got exposed by a guy like, you know, Dustin Poirier. Dustin Poirier was just a better, in my opinion, just I think he beat Dustin at featherweight early on in like Dustin's early career. But I think, you know, if you match those guys up any time now, McGregor's getting torqued.
I agree. I think that, I don't know. I feel like if McGregor were to come back to the UFC, first of all, you got to see if this guy's on coke or not, because
I mean, yeah.
He looks like he's doing steroids and blow all fucking day is what he looks like he's doing. He looks like, everyone's always like, he looks great. I'm like, yeah, he looks heavy to me. He looks like he looks stiff. He looks like he's fucking juicing, and I don't know, maybe that was just for that movie he was in. I don't know. I think fighting in the UFC again is a mistake, because first of all, he doesn't want to fight in like fucking, what is it, 6 years?
I mean, if he just wants a payday, I guess so.
When was the last time he won? 2019 against Donald Cerrone?
He beat Cerrone by shoulder. That's when he did the shoulder strike.
And it was like the first 10 then, seconds of the fight, too. Like, he did it like right at the beginning.
Cerrone's washed by then, you know. That's his last fight, basically. He's on his way out. Like,
and then he fought Khabib afterwards.
50 UFC fights.
And then he fought Khabib afterwards, which I literally remember, and I'm sure I've said this on here before, but I remember whenever I heard that, I was like, that is such a mistake. It's just a mistake because he hadn't fought in a while.
Stylistically, it was the worst matchup he could possibly have.
He never should have fought him. I don't think he could. He could fight him 100 times. I don't think he'd win one time.
I don't either.
I think
a great fight for him would have been Tony Ferguson. That would have really cemented his status. I mean, his Aldo win is always going to stand the test of time because Aldo's probably one of the top 10 guys to ever do it. Like, he was great.
I just don't understand why, like, you know, UFC's been around for 20 years now or longer, you know, almost 30. Okay, it's kind of been proven at this point that no matter how, you know, transcendent of a striker you are, how much power you got, you know, you can really knockout king, all this shit. Like, but it never matters when you go up against a guy that has a superior ground game. So what I don't understand is, I know a lot of guys in the UFC that if you just made strikers fight each other, I think the fights, I mean, in people's eyes would be more entertaining. Because, like, you know, a guy like Conor McGregor, even from the beginning, I was like, yeah, but eventually somebody's going to take this fucking Irishman to the ground, this little leprechaun to the ground, and I am interested to see. Because, dude, most of the fights, I mean, he cut that left hand of his was dangerous, and he was quick, He had a good spinning kick.
It was a missile.
Yeah, but like the thing is, like that's, but those kind of guys, and I'm afraid that's what Pereira's kind of heading to. I mean, the guy's good.
That's exactly right.
But he's just a striker. I mean, you know what I mean? Sean O'Malley.
He's 37 years old, man. He's 37 years old. Like, he's got a limited window here, age wise. And, you know, a lot of the lighter weights, they say 35 is the limit. Like, usually you're not going to win a title. I don't think there's ever been anybody to win a title in the men's division after 35 from 170 below. Now, you know, higher than that, it gets a little bit, like, you can drag it out a little bit. But, you know, Pierre's 37. Like, he's almost 40. Like, is that going to hold up, you know, in the next 3 years?
I mean, honestly, if you think about it, this fight might have just kind of been the end of his run. If you think about it, like he probably could have been. He probably won't be champion again. I'm sure he might fight 10 more times. You know, who knows? But I don't think any of the. I mean, who knows? I'm not counting the guy out. I think he's great. You know, he's got an incredible left hook. I mean, he's fucking his kicks, everything. Like, the dude's just a monster. But like, I just feel like now. Dude, and here's the other thing, what people don't realize is, and like, it's funny because a lot of people are like, well, the UFC ain't going to sell any more pay-per-views because all these Dagestanis are champions. But if you think about it, once one of these grapplers become champion, they're not going to lose. Like, it's going to have to take someone that's better on the ground to take it from them. Like, one of these hotshot fucking...
Or a guy that's very balanced, you know?
What I was getting at is, it's just like, how has the UFC been going on this long? And you've got these guys that are subpar or just okay on the ground. Like, how does that happen? And I think a lot of it does have to do with matchups. I mean, obviously, you want to make the best fights and you got to make it entertaining in a way. But like... I just don't see how you go through your career like this, and it always
out there. If you're the UFC, you're trying to regain interest of American audience. Like, go out there and get some NCAA wrestlers that can wrestle their ass off, like, and like start teaching them striking. Go to Penn State. Go to Oklahoma State. You got Daniel Cormier as your connection. You know, go there and start getting those guys.
Yeah, but doesn't jiu-jitsu beat American wrestling? I'm pretty sure, like, that was the issue that American wrestlers came into, is that going up against, like, BJJ, it was, like, it's kind of the same thing with what's the Sambo, Dagestani jiu-jitsu blend that they're doing. It's kind of negating jiu-jitsu. Before jiu-jitsu took over, I'm telling you, it's kind of like it's what happens. Like, this fighting style,
there's cycles.
Everyone bites off of it because it's being effective. Before Brazilian jiu-jitsu, what was it? Wrestling? I mean, I guess you could always say it's always been there, but like, it was just proven in the first couple UFCs. It's like, if you can't wrestle, you're fucked. And then it turned into, if you can't do Brazilian jiu-jitsu, you know, you're not going to win because, you know, even against wrestlers.
You're dead on about this, because look at the women's division now. Like, nobody complained about Ronda Rousey. She wasn't a striker. She was a grappler. She armbarred everybody.
Yep.
Everybody tuned in to see the armbar. Like, nobody could defend. She was literally the Hoist Gracie of women's MMA. Like,
I don't. She okay. Won't go down okay.
As the greatest ever.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, I think Gracie has more of a. I don't know. I don't want to disrespect Ronda. I've always said Ronda's like kind of the Bill Russell of the women's division, because she was the first great one. She, like, pioneer. You know, the early days. I mean, I mean, everybody knew that she was destined. Like, it was such a small pool of women fighting that there was just somebody like Cyborg was going to come in and be like, oh, I'm way better.
And Amanda Nunes was right there to step up. And
Holly Holmes. Week. Like, once those kinds of women came in, it was just kind of like, you know, the Beatles compared to Guns N' Roses in the 80s. It's like, you want to listen to Appetite for Destruction, or you want to listen to fucking Paperback Writer? We're trying to get our dicks up.
The evolution of the sport, you know.
Yeah.
Like Valentina Shevchenko, she's got striking and she's got grappling. She's the closest thing to women's St. Pierre that we've had. Like, if you think about St. Pierre's early fights, like he knocked people out on the feet. Like, not everybody. There's a guy named Jay Haran, and he finished him with punches. I remember he TKO'd him. It was on the feet. Then he knocked out Matt Hughes with a head kick. But, you know, after that, basically almost all of his wins came via, you know, ground and pound, a submission, or really at the end of his tail end of his career, he fought very safe, in my opinion, and he won on a point, you know, a point. He fought round by round to get the points and get out of there. Like,
all right, buddy, but, you better take it easy over there. Some say he's fighting smarter.
I mean, look, you can definitely, if you're thinking it's, but it, I guess my point was towards the end there, it wasn't the most visually appealing performance. Like, he wasn't in there to finish fights.
He's in there to win. Like, yeah, I agree. I know what you're saying. It's kind of like, but it kind of proves the point we're making. It's just like, yeah, striking's great, but you know something we haven't said since the UFC? It's never been like a league where you had to be the best striker to win. It's been since day one. You have to have a ground game because dudes were like boxers and kickboxing, those guys, they always struggled in those early days whenever it was just fucking free for all, battle royale, sumo wrestler versus fucking Swiss kickboxer. Let's go. Like, it was, which I love. I wish there was a league like that where it was just
where like there was no weight classes. It was fucking just whoever versus whoever.
Shaolin monk versus crack whore on the street. Like, that'd be great. Two different kinds of warriors. Fucking you got fucking
two saviors.
Would be another good one. Israeli special forces versus or I guess a Krav Maga master versus a professional wrestler, like a WWE guy. That'd be cool. I mean, that's pretty much, isn't that what fucking Ken Shamrock did? Wasn't that his whole thing?
He was a little bit of everything.
I don't think Luke's on the phone again. And we'll take this time to say that this podcast is brought to you by Killing Time Productions.
What's going on? What's going on, Luke?
This podcast is brought to you by Killing Time Productions. Please donate.
I'm back.
What happened, dude? Did you get stopped by the cops?
I'm not sure. It seems like about 20 minutes in, it just like cuts off or something. My phone's charged. I don't know.
Well, you know, it's okay. We're not mad at you, but I was in the middle of a very good point that I wish I could remember what the fuck I was saying.
Free-for-all wrestling?
All I was really going to say is, like, I feel like there's been only a few exceptions to that. Anderson Silva being one of them. So like, far you know,
But that dude also, I mean, he was also, I mean, dude, first of all, he's Brazilian. If you're going to sit there and tell me that guy ain't got a good grasp on Brazilian jiu-jitsu. But right, you couldn't get close. The thing with him is you couldn't get close to him. It's the same thing that's helped John Jones a lot. Use their length is
his timing. Timing and spatial awareness was critical.
Also, John Jones learning Brazilian jiu-jitsu just made him way more. I remember when he was a blue belt. He's got to be a black belt now by this point. But I mean, I remember
he's the best. This is my opinion. Like, he's the best guy to ever do it. He's the guy that had the most natural ability coming in and put the most pieces together to just be the most dominant guy. Like, I'm not saying he hadn't been in close fights. In fact, I thought there was, you could argue Dominic Reyes should have won against John Jones. But him cleaning out 205, moving up to heavyweight, choking out Ciryl Gane.
Dude, he did to Ciryl Gane, I was about to say, like, that surprised me because I was worried for him. I was like, Ciryl Gane ain't nothing to fucking shake a stick at. This guy right here. This kind of guy right here, I'm telling you, this guy, he'll fucking,
he's scary.
Turn your head backwards. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, Ciryl Gane, he ain't nothing to fuck with. So, and he's an experienced heavyweight. And John Jones, like, that being his first fight, I thought, I was like, damn, that's a pretty big, and he went out and dominated him, dude. He dominated, honestly, every fight. I mean, he's only done, what, two heavyweight fights, but he's fucked, I mean, he fucked Stipe up, and I don't care how old Stipe is, that's Stipe Miocic.
He's a tough motherfucker, yeah.
That's Stipe Miocic, the best heavyweight of all time, so, you know.
That's right.
Get the fuck out of here.
You know, if I'm John at this point, you don't need the Tom fight. Like, you could literally walk away, you could go to PFL, that other organization, and you could fight Francis for the bag, for a huge bag. Like, people want to see Jones versus Francis. Everybody's going to tune in for that fight. Nobody's not going to be watching Francis Ngannou versus John Jones.
That is true.
Like,
dude, that is one guy I think that could be John Jones.
That's one guy. It could be anybody.
That's what I'm saying. He's the scariest man I've ever seen in my life that doesn't play in the NFL.
But
Hell, John Jones isn't the scariest.
Jones has to be the favorite.
No.
Jones has to be the favorite.
Well, I don't know. See, here's the thing. It's hard for me to say John Jones is afraid of anybody because these guys are professional fighters. I don't know if they can actually be afraid of somebody. But if I was ever, if I'm John Jones, if I was ever afraid to fight somebody, Francis Ngannou is that guy. It's just, that to me is the difference between a true heavyweight and John Jones.
He can send you into the shadow realm.
Yeah. He's got the meanest uppercut.
He had an officer over him. It's got to be the most vicious knockout in modern
that fucking
MMA,
uppercut like, that he landed.
Yes.
Oh my god.
Like, he looked like he took his head clean.
That was a Rock'em Sock'em robot. That was a Rock'em Sock'em robot.
It looked like Mortal Kombat when the guy comes out and says Toasty.
He ragdolled Stipe the second time they fought too. Like that had. If I was Stipe, yeah. I would have taken the one win and been like, thanks, Francis. No, I'm never fighting you again. I'm done. I'm retiring, actually. I'm not going to fight ever again. I would have retired. If I'm Stipe, I would have retired after beating Francis because that's a pretty big win in my opinion because I don't see how anyone can beat him. Francis Ngannou is one of those. Dude, first of all, everyone talks about that Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather boxing fight. Boxing match. And everyone's like, well, Conor went 10 rounds. Well, yeah. I mean, Floyd just sat there and let Conor throw 100,000 punches.
Yeah, they knew this was going to happen. He's going to tire him down. That's what he does. It's his game.
Francis Ngannou legitimately almost beat Tyson Fury, who is arguably one of the greatest heavyweights to ever box.
Oh, as it stands right now, like in the modern history. Like
yes, modern.
Who do you have better than Tyson Fury? Maybe Usyk since he's lost to Usyk twice now?
Hey, I don't care what anybody says. Deontay Wilder was a great champion for the United States, and that dude has one of the meanest hooks I've ever seen in my life.
Just straight power.
Dog, that man right there is like, he was our Mike Tyson. He was our my generation's Mike Tyson. The dude, till this day, till this day. I love that shit, man. That guy ruled. He also had Americans interested in boxing. As soon as Tyson Fury came in, and you know, I also felt bad because after the second, like you know, obviously if you lose to a guy, you're like, all right, get a rematch. If you lose,
dude, it's over. He got big brothered in that second fight, like. He just got worked over. Like it looked like a man that knew what he was doing against a guy that hadn't been in the boxing, like sparring almost. Like
it's kind of like that Rocky movie. It's like watching Rocky in one of the movies beat up a street tough. It's like a street tough. It's like, hey, give me your wallet. And then Rocky's like uses his professional boxing skills to fuck him up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, you don't want to do that.
It kind of reminded me. And that's not to take anything from Wilder. Like, I feel like he got a late start in boxing. He's great, dude.
I don't care. No. There's no taking anything away from him. The guy's great. He's one of the best. He fucking only lost the one. He only lost to Fury, didn't he? He was undefeated when they fought.
He lost to Parker after that, like the New Zealander. But like, man, after those Fury losses, you could just kind of tell he wasn't into it anymore. Like it was like, you know, like
the hype
when
was
Fury
kinda
beat
gone,
him that
yeah.
second time, he got the money he needed. He is ready to go. And I think Deontay Wilder is almost 40 years old, also if not 40.
I think he's over 40 by this because he was in his late 30s when they fought him and Tyson.
Exactly.
So he could be in his mid 40s by this point, honestly, since how long ago those fights were, if you think about it. But
you're right about your point. Like, American audience is reinvested in heavyweight boxing.
He was champion for a while too. He had a good title reign. I mean, the guy. Why I like when people talk about him, they're always like, you know, give him credit. I'm like, what do you mean give that? The guy was champion for fucking years. Yeah. Like, this guy ruled. He was awesome. He was great in an interview.
Yeah,
he had great
the fucking
promos. The guy ruled.
Fucking,
sure.
I mean, I still think you know,
Sweet Caroline.
So, Luke, who do you think the greatest heavyweight in boxing ever is?
Oh man, like Muhammad Ali, it's not even a question for me.
Wow.
Like I think Muhammad Ali, not just because of his influence he had, but like he could do things that I've never seen any other heavyweight do to heavyweights that were like George Foreman, dude. Think about George Foreman. Think about how hard George Foreman hit.
And Joe Frazier.
How good of a fighter George Foreman was. I mean, he won the heavyweight title at like 50 years old, right?
No, George Foreman was that dude. A lot of people forget him because he sells those goofy fucking grills.
Grills.
And Ollie
caused messes like that you've never seen before in your life. Those things, they work really well.
Ollie retired.
Dude, didn't Foreman fight Ollie?
Yeah, the Rumble in the Jungle, brother.
And he won, didn't he?
Well, he beat him. He roped the doped him.
That's right. No, you're right.
The Rumble in the Jungle. That's Joe Frazier. Ollie 3.
Yeah, that's Frazier. Yeah. Ollie. That's when James Brown opened up. Right before. No, that's true, dude. That video, Frazier, James Brown.
One of the meanest left hooks in all of boxing, and Ollie, you know, lost to him the first time. Comes back and transcends what it means for a comeback. Comes back after being dodging the, you know, well, you know, not going to war, going to prison.
Yeah, I mean,
comes back and beats Frazier twice. And the Thrill in Manila is probably one of the greatest fights of all time. Then you got to think about the other guys that were around at that time. Ken Norton Sr. broke Ollie's jaw. Ollie comes back and beats him with a broken jaw. I think Norton won that fight, but Ollie beats him in the second fight. I can't remember exactly. But Leon Speaks. He beats Leon Speaks. He beats what was that guy's name? Ernie Shavers. Some people consider Ernie Shavers the hardest puncher of all time. And Ollie just beat them all. He beat every single person lined up against him. And
okay. Listen, I don't typically argue against Muhammad Ollie because here's the thing. Like, he's one of those guys. This is a guy we're talking about here. Like, he's one of those guys that transcends sports. Like, he was so much bigger than just boxing, and that's as an individual. You know what I mean?
He's a cultural icon.
Yeah, I mean, the whole, like, you know, no, you're not going to send me to war. I'm in the middle of my box. And it was in the middle of his prime. Like, it was the best of the best. Like, Cassius Clay.
Like a butterfly, speaking like a bee. Sonny Liston.
You're going to send
Patterson.
Dude, you're going to send me to war? You should be sending me. What, am I going to go punch people in the fucking face with, like, grenades? Like, fucking, right. I'm better off here making money. Fuck you. Right. And also, I agree with them. If I'm just chilling in here one day and people came in here, conscription squad.
Well, that's insane. Like, it's like,
a fucking conscription squad
to go to war. I mean, there are people out there that are like, yeah, I want to do that. But most people don't want to go die. Like,
no,
well,
especially when you're
you want me to
boxing career, it's taking off.
Like, yeah, you're the best boxer in the world. Yeah. You're like, oh, you want me to go fight in Vietnam? Who I look like, Elvis?
I don't mean any disrespect to our service people. I'm just saying, like, most people don't want
to
do that.
And that's fine. I respect people that have that.
To do. You know what I mean?
Like, I think that call of duty, not to, you know, name drop there, but the call to duty that people feel, I respect that. I don't have it. Right. I do not want to go fight in fucking Germany in 2060 here in the next 10 years during World War III. I don't want to go fight in a war I had no hand in starting. I didn't start the war.
I get why people felt upset about him not wanting to go because they had sons and people like that had to go, that were drafted.
They're like, why doesn't he have to go? Like, yeah.
Well, I think that's why it was an important stance he took, because it shined a light on. It's like, why are we forcing people to go do this shit?
I agree.
You know what I mean?
I totally agree.
Also,
dude,
I think it's what kind of bred, like, during Vietnam, there was a lot of fucking, you know, dissension within the ranks. Because there are a lot of people there that didn't believe in it. Like, watch Platoon, dude. Willem Dafoe, he knew it was wrong.
Not to mention the underlying racial tensions that were, you know, in America.
Oh, yeah.
At the time.
Oh, yeah. So black people, especially.
The
balls on the white government people to go to black people and be like, hey, listen, you can't drink out of the same water fountain. The water fountain you drink out of is just like a straight line of black, like brown water.
For sure.
But we want you to go fight in Vietnam. Yeah, I understand black people being like, why the fuck would I go kill Vietnamese people? I should be killing you, motherfucker. I should be killing you, motherfucker. You know what I mean? Like,
I understand that.
I mean, Muhammad Ali, like, I think that was one of his famous things. He's like, what the fuck did the Vietnamese ever do to me? They didn't do anything to me.
That's right.
So I think that's why I don't ever really argue with that. But I always think that, to me personally, there's a really good argument that there's four dudes from the 80s that have a really good argument for it. And
no,
they just had...
They weren't heavyweights. They weren't heavyweights. And I know you're going to say, Leonard, Hagler, Hearns, and Duran, right?
Yep.
Yes. They were all, what weight were they? They were,
I thought they were heavyweights.
They weren't heavyweights.
Marvin Hagler wasn't a heavyweight?
No. No.
What?
They weren't heavyweights.
Jamie, look that up. I want to see if Marvin Hagler was a
fighter. Yeah, Jamie, go bring that up, bro.
Bring that up, Jamie. I want to see that. I'm about to argue with you like Joe Rogan. I'm not sure about that.
I'm positive about that, brother.
All right, well, if you're wrong, you got to bring me a free item from your store.
Absolutely. I'll bring you clam juice. I'll just take it off the shelf.
Damn it. They were middleweights. Damn it. All right, well, still, never mind then.
Bring me the clam juice.
It's my I think the biggest argument is Tyson then.
See, that's where we'll have a disagreement. Not that I don't think Tyson was great. I think he's top 5.
You don't think he's 2 even at worst?
Hey, I got to go pee. Trevor, make your case cuz I come back, I got a rebuttal on this, all right?
You get a what?
He has a rebuttal. He's about to say some blasphemous shit.
I think that if you want to say he's not the greatest, that's fine. But top 5, it minimum top 3 is just. I don't see a way that you can say he's not top 3.
You can't if you're involving all weight classes. If you're saying heavyweight, yeah, he's top 3. He's top 3 if you're talking just heavyweights. But if you involve all boxers, I mean, it's Ali's top 3. His spot's secure. But, dude, then you got to think about guys like Rocky Marciano. He went undefeated. Floyd Mayweather.
I mean, Floyd Mayweather does make a good case just because...
Jack Johnson. All of his fights were in black and white. And you hear... whenever he's fighting.
No, I've always thought... I mean...
Pacquiao.
If I was picking my top 3, it'd probably, I don't know, if Muhammad Ali and Mike Tyson is hard to choose from.
I think Tyson's the scariest fighter ever.
I think so for sure, but I think if I was ranking fighters, I'd probably go Ali, Tyson, Floyd Mayweather.
Ali, Tyson, Floyd Mayweather.
So Mike Tyson's number 2 based on what?
Just like overall,
I said that if we're talking just heavyweights, I think he's number 2. But if we're involving all boxers, I don't know if I could have him at number 2.
I'd say no, definitely not number 2 in all boxing. Like
not all time, but I think you could say he's not the second best heavyweight ever. He dominated that division for a long time.
Here's my who did he beat?
Evander Holyfield.
No, Evander Holyfield beat him.
Yeah, well, he bit his ear off, so I count that as a win for Tyson. So you're wrong.
Okay. We're judging on that criteria. Absolutely. I'd actually say that you can make a strong case that Joe Lewis is number 2, based on him basically beating everybody. You know, finishing. I think he beat Max Schmeling, who killed a guy with a punch. Maybe 2. I can't remember. I'm sorry. Max Bear. I said Max Schmeling. He did beat Max Schmeling. He goes to Germany and beats Max Schmeling in front of Hitler, I believe. I could be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure that happened.
No, I know you're talking about. I know. Yeah. Well, I was talking to Trevor because I was like, well, here's the thing. When you start bringing up, Luke, a good argument for Mike Tyson is the cultural impact he had on boxing.
Okay.
I mean,
now, if you're going to say cultural impact, I would say that, like, yes. Like, he's
the
most
dude, the guy was the fucking ferocious. Dude, this guy, people wasted $60 every time he fought. And this guy fought. He fought, like, fucking how many times a year? Like,
here's the deal. Can you remember who he won the title from when he was 21 and became the youngest heavyweight of all time, champion of all time? Do you remember the guy he beat?
Trevor, nobody. Talk to him for a second. I'll get back to you on that.
Right. So my point to this is, like, you remember Evander Holyfield and who he beat? He beat Mike Tyson. Not only did he beat Mike Tyson, but he beat Rick Bowe.
He beat Trevor Burbick, which I did know. I did know that. Hey, I just couldn't remember his name. I did know he beat Trevor Burbick, though.
And that's a legitimate win. But he had a lot of wins that were just like any boxer. And that's true in all of boxing. But when he came up, the guys that he came up against that were his legitimate rivals in the sport, he lost to every one of them, basically. Evander Holyfield. Lennox Lewis. Who did he beat? And he loses to James Buster Douglas in one of the greatest upsets of all time.
Well, Buster Douglas is fucking somebody died, and dude, you weren't gonna beat him that night. I don't care who you were. Muhammad Ali wouldn't have beat him that night.
I understand. I understand the point.
Well, that's
why
boxing's beautiful, Luke, right there, because so many fights told great stories. Like, that's the great thing about boxing. Like, dude, that's why I was bringing up. And also, again, we're talking about all the best fighters ever. In my opinion, Marvin Hagler is in my top three.
He's my number one behind. I mean, it's Ali and then Hagler 1B, basically.
Like, Marvin Hagler, if he wanted to, he could have, like, dude, I'm just saying, he fought in probably the toughest division, with who he was in his division for his career.
He won that Leonard fight. I feel like that he beat Leonard.
Well, I think a lot of people say that he did. And I think isn't that kind of what the Apollo Creed Rocky thing was kind of based on, that fight? Where,
I don't know. That might be true.
Because Marvin was like, oh, this guy's the people's champ right here. Which, dude, Sugar Ray, I mean, again, one of the best ever. Tommy Hearns was Tommy Machine Gun Hearns.
He's the original, knockout, left hand knockout, just push you on your ass and you're not getting up from it.
Nah, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, dude. Oh, Roberto Duran. See, that's
hands of stone.
But also, again, I was telling Trevor, you got to talk about guys like Jack Johnson also. The old Jack Dempsey.
Jack Dempsey. Yeah, there's so many guys. Archie Moore won over 100 fights, 100 professional boxing fights.
I don't care what anybody says. Oh, and then Rocky Marciano, undefeated. What, he was the
Marciano, undefeated heavyweight champion. People shit on Floyd Mayweather, but the guy went 50 fights undefeated.
I'd put him at three.
It's hard to discredit the guy. I watched him my whole career, and to me, the best boxer, in my opinion, that I watched. And they weren't in I'm not saying they're the same weight class or whatever, but I think Pacquiao should get a lot of credit. The dude was a fucking monster.
Pacquiao was a monster.
He's one of my favorite. He might be my favorite that I've watched growing, that I actually got to watch. He was my favorite. I genuinely think if him and Mayweather fought earlier, he would have beat him. And that's easy to say, but, hard to prove. I just think, the fight that they had, Pacquiao was going for it, and Mayweather was in that era where he was just like, all right, I just need to win off points. I'm not going to go for the finish. I'm not going to let him finish me. And, you got to give him credit.
He outboxed him.
Pacquiao kind of went for it more. He kind of went, you know what I mean? He wanted it to be more of a fucking let's duke it out. Let's see.
It's a sport for a reason. It's not, bare knuckle boxing where you're going in there and trying to just basically rip the other guy's head off.
Well, I guess that's why, the thing is, you think Muhammad Ali's the best, right? He didn't win every fight. It doesn't matter. A lot of the things that you love about fighters is the way they respond to losses and going for it and having heart and everything. Mayweather, look, the thing I will say about him is he's the best defensive boxer I've ever seen.
Absolutely.
I've watched 20 plus fights of his, and all I ever wanted to do was watch someone punch him in his fucking face. I just wanted someone to bruise his face. I wanted someone to fuck him up, and I never saw it happen. I saw
he made you feel that all the way.
Every
time you stepped in the ring.
Yes, I just wanted it's not even about losing or what. I just wanted someone to fucking make him feel like everything wasn't sweet. Shit ain't sweet, Floyd. I'm about to tag your fucking ass. Oh, and other guys that I would like to bring up. Roy Jones Jr. was also one of the best I got. I got to watch him. I was a little young during his peak, but
Real. Roy Jones might have been the most athletic guy I've ever
so fast.
I've never seen Roy Jones do stuff that anybody do stuff that Roy Jones has done in the boxing ring.
So fucking fast, dude. The guy he would jab. He would jab and hook at you. He wouldn't throw. Yeah. He would jab it.
He was an artist. Literally an artist.
You know how much energy it takes to even just fake a jab, and he would do it. And he would have people going, because it's please don't, I'm sorry. I'd fall down if he was but there's a thing, his hook, he threw his hook so fast and so fucking powerful, it sounded like a bowling ball hitting the concrete from the top of the Empire State Building. And it was so quick, you never saw it coming. You know how many guys would just be standing there and like they show it in slow motion, they never move, and the hand just comes in and just fucking knocks their ass. Sounds like a movie. Roy Jones Jr. Was one of the scariest dudes. And then Julio Cesar Chavez was fucking incredible.
Chavez was the greatest dog of all time.
Dude, you could punch him 100 times and his face would look the same after a fight.
There's the reason they say Mexican style boxing is based on Chavez. Like, it epitomized everything that, like, what, you know, Hispanic culture feels like they represent, in that, like, we're going to get knocked down, but we're going to come at you. We're going to keep coming. We're going to get back up, and we're not going to give up. Man.
Yeah, like, dude, just like the Alamo. They fucking won. If you think about it, they won.
Well, yeah.
Dude, Julio Cesar Chavez also fought like 113 times, and he won.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm looking at it. He was 107-6 with two draws. Insane. With two draws. He defended.
Think about
that. He had 27 title defenses, which is the record. And he fought.
He's got like an over 90% fucking winning record.
This guy fought in 37 title fights and won 27 of them. That's like, how is this guy, like, it's like, how is he not considered the greatest? Like, that's insane.
Dude, that's
he's
right.
Like the Wilt Chamberlain. He's literally the fucking, he's the Wilt Chamberlain of the fucking
known
boxing.
For his strong jaw, his strong chin, and devastating left hook. Yeah, dude. I mean, I remember watching him, that fucking guy. I remember watching his last fight against Meldrick Taylor. I remember watching that.
Meldrick Taylor.
My dad was sad whenever that happened.
Dude, it was one of the
worst things that happened. Oh, my God, dude. Julio Cesar Chavez. He won 89 fights in a row.
Jesus Christ.
89 fights in a row. He was the
greatest Mexican boxer of all time, and that's including Canelo. Canelo's great, but
he also got
Chavez.
Oscar De La Hoya, who he lost to in 1996. Yeah. Oscar De La Hoya was also
time,
good.
You know, he was the guy coming up to take the mantle, you know. Oscar was looked as that guy, you know.
Dude, he lost his 89 fight win streak in 1994, and he only lost like what, three more times after that. He lost to De La Hoya in 96, Katsuyu or fucking some Japanese guy, and then fucking Meldrick Taylor. So I mean, he only lost a few. That's crazy, dude. Like,
you guys want to watch a guy? I'm sorry. Apologize.
No, you're good. Go ahead, dude.
You said Japanese boxing. There's a guy right now. He's a Japanese boxer. His name is, man, I can't pronounce his first name right now, but they call him Monster Inoue, and he is legit. Like, he's wrecking everybody. This guy is, he's undefeated. He won all the belts in the original weight class he was in. Moves up, wins all the belts in that weight class, undisputed, undefeated. The guy is ridiculously good. Pound for pound, he's the best in the sport right now.
Damn, I'm trying to think of, like, now that Tyson Fury's gone, who's the guy in heavyweight? Usyk?
Usyk, yeah, Usyk's definitely that guy. You got to think, he came up, think about Usyk. He was the cruiserweight champion of the world. Basically, I think he was undisputed at cruiserweight. So he had all four titles in that weight class. In boxing, there's usually four titles in each weight class. And if you unify, you're undisputed. He goes up. Tyson Fury's undisputed. And he takes Tyson Fury's undisputed status and becomes, not only beats him, but then goes back and fights him again and beats him again. Like, in the second time, I feel like was more convincing than the first time.
No, yeah, I mean,
Usyk is, in the last 20 years, the best guy to do it. He's the Evander Holyfield of this generation. Evander Holyfield started out at cruiserweight. He was undisputed there. He goes up to heavyweight. Had probably three of the greatest heavyweight fights of all time with Riddick Bowe. And you talk about a guy that probably could have been the best ever. Riddick Bowe had more talent than anybody I'd seen, probably more talent, just as much talent as Tyson. Not quite as much power, but just a ridiculous amount of, like, I don't know, like, bravado and, like, power. He had the whole package. And Holyfield and him just have three wars, which Holyfield gets the best of in the end. But oh my God, you know what beat Riddick Bowe? Diabetes, basically.
Yeah, beats a lot of people.
Diet. His diet. His weakness was his diet.
It's like the best
controlled his diet.
Diabetes is undefeated.
Yes. He might have been the GOAT if he could have controlled his diet. But, you know.
Millions every year.
See, the thing with boxing is, like, I think that's why a lot of people kind of just universally agree with Muhammad Ali, because, like, not very many boxers have had the impact in the ring that they do outside of it. Like, that's why, right. That's the biggest argument for Tyson. The guy was a savage. He's one of the most terrifying dudes to ever be in the ring, but also outside.
One of the hardest hitters of all time.
Oh, pound, that's what I'm saying. Pound for pound, one of the strongest dudes ever. Also, one of the best, most naturally gifted athletes to ever lace him up. The dude was a fucking...
Custodio coaching him, one of the greatest coaches of all
time. I truly think a lot of, like, what happened with him once he kind of got famous. I mean, like, you know, he always grew up being kind of a shithead, but... You know, the guy trained his ass off and everything, but you can't tell me that those things, like the drugs and the fucking, the slapping the women and buying tigers.
Of course.
All that shit, that, like, it takes away from his greatness. Like, it's kind of like what people think, do you think Lawrence Taylor was better for doing crack? No, he was just so goddamn good at it and holding back from it. He could smoke crack and go fucking get 5 sacks in a game. Not most people can do that.
Right.
Trevor, you smoke crack and go try to play pickup basketball with your church group. You'll have a fucking heart attack. You understand me? You can't do it. So, like, that's just a testament to how good they are. So, I mean...
Well, that's why I'd say it's impressive. It's impressive
you're
about...
You're talking about that. And think about John Jones. Think about the troubles he's had throughout his whole career and what he's done just in spite of that. Think about if he had just stayed off the drugs... You know, out of the media
two
spotlight,
more wins against fucking.
He'd have a much easier.
You know, he did you watch him in fight Alexander Gustafsson when he was at 205? Alexander Gustafsson was picked as the guy that might be Jones back in the day. He's
I
from
remember.
Sweden.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
And Jones didn't even train for that fight, is what they said. He trained like 1 week or something ridiculous, and he goes out in the second fight and just beats the fucking brakes off this guy, right? Like, Jones is like all the level talent, in my opinion, for MMA. Like, he is the cream of the crop. Like, I'm not saying anything about the guy's personal life. Who gives a shit? I'm watching fighting for fighting, not because I care about the dude's personal life. I'm not, you know, reading fucking, you know, like National Enquirer, John Jones or whatever. Like, the guy's just got all that. He has ring IQ. He's vicious on the ground. He understands spacing and timing, space and distance and timing. He creates, he changes his game in mid fight to where it adapts.
Kind of like
the
Tom Brady
fighter
of the fucking UFC, honestly. He just fucking wins.
That's what it feels like when
Tom Brady wasn't doing blow and getting pulled over,
no,
doing 120
had,
on the LA Expressway.
Scandals. So you
and
run
in, and
running
into pregnant.
I don't think
he's.
Well, wait a minute. Okay. Here's the thing. I've always said that that's honestly the biggest case against John Jones as being the GOAT is because, like, the dude's always brought a lot of... He's brought a lot of a negative attention to the UFC being one of the guys that represent... You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and, like, Dana White has such a hard-on for him that this guy's going to have to kill somebody before he's like, all right, fine. He's still the best I've ever seen. I'm just saying. See, I've always, like... honestly, I think it's kind of gotten to the point where I kind of just kind of give it up to John Jones. Him going up to heavyweight and winning the championship was really impressive.
I just have
always been partial to GSP because the guy was, first of all, the beating
he's
I saw.
Model.
The guy, yes, well, that's what I'm saying. Like, first of all, great guy to have as your, like, face of the league. He also, as far as his balance as a fighter, he's the most balanced, well-balanced fighter I've seen in the UFC. His striking game was great, as you said early on, and then he transitions to being arguably the best takedown guy I've seen. He had, like, a 73% takedown rating, which is insane, which means if he wants you on the ground, you're going on the ground. And that's how he won a lot of his fights later on. And also, the beating he put on BJ Penn is one of the most delightful things I've ever watched.
God.
He put beating on that Hawaiian. He hit him over the head with everything but a ukulele.
And people don't realize this, but BJ Penn was the first American black belt in history. Like, I believe he's the first American jiu-jitsu black belt ever. And he was that damn good.
He was,
dominated. He dominated lightweight. He goes out and beats Jens Pulver, who's an animal. Jens Pulver is a vicious, like a dog, like a Robbie Lawler at 155. He's a fucking animal. He goes out and beats Jens Pulver. He beats Sean Sherk, who is the dominant lightweight champion at the time. Just beats the brakes off him. Makes him look bad. He, you know, BJ Penn's on this run, historical run at lightweight. And then he goes up and fights St. Pierre. And St. Pierre
beat the fuck out of him, dude.
Just shows that there's different, there are levels to that game.
Nah, dude, GSP was a fucking dog. I mean, he was one of my favorites. I remember, I think I watched, like from that BJ Penn fight on, I think I watched every single fight that he did from then on. I honestly think the biggest thing people have against him is the Matt Serra thing, which I think is kind of like, yeah, but he did end up beating him. You know what I mean? It's not like he lost
he came
to him
back
never,
and won. That's
yeah,
right.
So
he
like, that's how I kind of look at it in fighting. You know what
and
I mean?
Not only did he even that matchup, but look at the way he beat Matt Serra in that second fight.
That's what I'm saying.
That was the most vicious GSP we'd ever seen. You know, if Matt Serra wasn't pissed and blood in the shower the next day, I'd be obviously surprised, because those knees that he was throwing to the body when he had him on the ground, oh my God. I can remember it. Like, it made me cringe every time he threw one. I was like, oh, this is bad. This
and then
is bad.
Everybody always says that Diaz gave him, I don't know, GSP just kind of outsmarted Diaz in that fight. He
also
kept
too.
Him to the ground. You know, that's
you know, the one fight I felt like was kind of parallel to John Jones and Dominic Reyes is when he fought Hendricks. I thought Hendricks,
Johnny Hendricks, yeah, that's yeah,
had a case to win that fight.
No, I agree. I think what it is like it was so close that you're just gonna give the nod to the champion, which it was a good. I thought it was a good fight. I thought Johnny Hendricks really brought it to him, and he gave him all he wanted. That's for sure.
That's what I'm saying about these you know, Johnny Hendricks was a, I can't remember if he was a four-time All-American or four-time national champion from Oklahoma State. Like,
makes sense, the best wrestling school ever.
Damn straight. 34 national titles. Like,
I mean, if you think about it, OSU as a school actually has I think they have the most national titles at the collegiate level if you combine all their sports.
Between golf and track and
wrestling.
And wrestling, yeah, they dominate in national titles.
I think
yes.
It's the best wrestling program in NCAA history.
Ever.
It is. Just,
ever.
Just, like the best of the best have come out of there.
Look, Iowa's number two. Iowa's in second. And Iowa's got a great program. But I think OSU's got like 10 titles over them.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, Penn State's on a run right now. Penn State hasn't lost a match in 5 fucking years, dude.
Dude, if I
five
tell you
years.
This much right now, oh yeah, I was actually going to say Penn State's got to be up there too, but dude, I'm telling you right now, like if you think about it, if you think about it, Oklahoma as a state has a great case of being the best NCAA state or
You're
NCAA,
absolutely right.
The best wrestling state in all of NCAA if you combine even D1 and D2. OU had its time as a wrestling powerhouse. OSU has always been a powerhouse, and even UCO has won multiple championships as a D2
Absolutely.
School. Oklahoma
Absolutely.
Has produced some of the best wrestlers in the country. You know what I mean?
Dude,
like,
yeah, absolutely.
Like it's
Daniel Cormier came from Oklahoma State. He was an Oklahoma State guy.
One of the best wrestlers in American history.
He lost to. Dang, I care. He lost to Kel Sanderson. He won the silver medal.
Oh, the one of the greatest wrestlers ever. Oh, I mean, I think I can forgive
him.
Kel
Sanderson is the only undefeated American NCAA wrestler ever. Like, he's the only one to go undefeated in his college career. Like, there's been some damn good guys, some 4-time national champs. Kel is still the only guy to ever go undefeated. He's now the coach of Penn State, and he's got a guy that's about to win 5 national titles in a row because of COVID year.
You know, like, Brock Lesnar only lost 2 matches his whole NCAA career, and I would just like to see
Steve
the
Mocko.
Yeah, I'd just like to see the guys that beat him in a fucking legit wrestling match. Like that, they've got to be.
But I can tell you, Steve Mocko beat him in NCAA's, and Steve Mocko went and played football for the New England Patriots.
Hell
NFL.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brock
yeah,
Lesnar couldn't even get off the practice
New England
squad.
Patriots. And his son is a heavyweight wrestler now coming up through high school ranks, and he's committed to OSU.
Damn, dude. I'm telling you, man. OSU. Yeah. That's one thing that they should bring up against football fans, because OU football fans are always
they
like,
always did.
Suck. Yeah, but it is kind of a lame argument, because it's like, yeah, but who cares? It's football.
Well, yeah, because then I'm like, oh, what about softball? Whenever that's what I would respond to.
I mean, that's true. Y'all are the best. Hey, dude, Oklahoma at the collegiate level, I'm telling you, we got, you know, as a state.
We're a dominant state at the collegiate
level.
Dude,
NEO. Also, let's not forget JUCO. We got one of the best JUCO wrestlers. I almost forgot. NEO's wrestling program is one of the best JUCOs in the country.
Yeah.
It's a pipeline to D1.
Look at OU softball program right now.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're just crushing people. Like, believe me or not, I think it's going to be harder this year than the SEC. They're going to play better competition, you know, back-to-back overall. But they still got to be the best. Regarded as the best team in the nation
until proven otherwise. I mean, they've literally. Exactly. I mean, have they lost a World Series since or whatever
like
they call
the it? Connecticut, a fucking.
No, you can't.
Yeah,
10 years ago.
Yeah, but hey, guys, it's getting a little late. We could probably do this for hours and hours, but I gotta go to bed soon. And there's food out there calling my name. But Luke, it's been a pleasure having you on.
Oh yeah,
appreciate the good talk. A lot of good information put out there. Everybody, if you want to learn,
it's all real. That's all real.
It's all real right there. Okay, that was a very professional podcast. So,
dude, I enjoyed it thoroughly. It was one of the best times I had on one. So, I've had some good times talking about my homeless people at Warehouse Marketing. You know,
hey, there's always time for that on other episodes. So. We'll definitely get to that. But Luke, thank you so much for being on. Trevor, thanks for coming out. Everybody, we'll talk to you guys next week. When's the next planned episode?
Hey, we got March Madness coming up.
Yeah, we're doing that.
Oh yeah, that's true.
We got to get that group together.
Next week, all the conference tournaments will be done, right? And bracket Sunday, right?
Yep. Yeah. So
yeah.
You should be looking forward to that.
All right, guys. Well, thank you guys for listening. Thank you, Luke. Thank you, Trevor. We will talk to you guys next week. Goodbye.
All right, guys.